All right, welcome to the Free Stretch here on JoeBucksFan.com. I am Bobby Fenton. It's a Week 3 home opener edition of the show as the Bucks, after the first preseason game, have not been home all these weeks, and they'll do it at Raymond James Stadium this Sunday afternoon, 4:25. They'll take on the Green Bay Packers. Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, of course, a whole lot of other people will figure into the conversation as well, although maybe fewer than we thought looking at this injury report, and we'll talk about that on the show today. But I'm sure the Buccaneers will come up with a receiving core one way or the other, as they right now have some guys that are dinged. Of course, Mike Evans is suspended. And these are all things that we'll get into, including the reason for the Evans suspension, which happened during the Saints game this past weekend. But thank you for joining us. Thanks to the Joes for putting me on here. I'm excited to do a show every week, but really excited this week with the home opener and with a 2-0 team. And folks, hey, tell me you're not getting... I'm trying till I kind of rein it in a little bit here. And normally, the last season before, it was about the offense. Man, what an offense we got. This defense, I'm getting vibes, okay? And I'm not going to go all the way there yet. But I'm just getting vibes of the late 90s, early 2000s teams. It's feeling that way again. And we talked last week after they beat Dallas about how it wasn't straight up dungy ball where the Bucks didn't even try to score or something like the way they used to do. And hey, let's win 13-7 or something like that. I used to love doing that. But then again, this weekend, same type of deal. And it was a really, really frustrating day for the offense for most of the day. They couldn't get anything done. And even in spite of that, the defense, if it was possible to outdo themselves after the Dallas game, they did just that in a dominating performance against Jameis Winston and the Saints offense. And just, okay, Dallas game 2 weeks ago, right? Dallas had that opening drive where they moved the ball a little bit, had to settle for a field goal, and then did absolutely nothing after that. Well, here's the drive chart for the Bucs-Saints game for the Saints. After the first drive, of course, the opening drive, same thing. They moved the ball a little bit, but the Bucs defense bent while not breaking, and New Orleans got a quick field goal. It was 3-0. Here are the ensuing drives for the rest of the game after that opening field goal. Punt, 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 punt. Fumble recovered by Tampa Bay. Interception, interception, interception. Then they finally got the garbage time touchdown to make it 20-10. By that point, the Bucs had 20 points. Fumble, turnover on downs. I mean, that just an absurd performance by the Buccaneer defense. And everybody was tweeting and joking about, oh, there's the Jameis we know and love. It's nice looking across the field and being on the other side of that for once. And you know what? I know I spent, if you've listened to this show for a long time, I've been doing this on Joe Bucs Fan since back before we even drafted Jameis, and I remember drafting him, and I was all about him. Like, I was fired up. And then it went how it went over the years, and as it gradually, you know, went through the 5 years, and I remember defending him. I remember saying, hey, you know, I still think this guy can be special. It kind of evolved into Vinny Testaverde comparisons there at the end where, okay, he's turnover prone, but he can still have a long career where he's productive while just having a little bit of a turnover ratio, which Vinny did after having a really high turnover ratio at first with the Bucks. But anyway, I digress. Point is, I remember just being on the Jameis bandwagon and just trying to find reasons why, hey, he could still be successful and we could still be successful with him. And ultimately, all that went out the window when it actually became possible we could have Tom Brady. But I have to admit, now that it was the other way around and he's on the other team, I know last year he played against him too before he got hurt pretty early in that game. But yeah, it was kind of nice because the true measure of a quarterback, I mean, we can look at all these different numbers and EPA, and I do all those things. I'm a big numbers guy. But the true measure of a quarterback is when you're going against him, how do you feel? Are you scared to death? When he drops back and sticks that back foot in the ground after a drop back, does your stomach go fluttering into your gut? Like, oh, God, what now? You know, like, oh, this guy's going to pick us apart. Or do you get kind of excited? Like, yeah, I think something good might happen here. Well, with Jameis, when he drops back to pass and he sticks that back foot in the ground and plants to throw, I'm like, okay, I'm all right with this. Like, let's see what happens. It does not scare me because you know eventually things are going to start going your way. And I'm hardly picking on him because the Bucs defense so far through two games has made, you know, more than just Jameis look this way. And I don't think that the two teams we've played are the most ridiculously high-powered offenses ever. But the Saints, I mean, you know, they can move the ball. And yet, the Bucs defense wasn't having it. And so after all the punts and everything like that, the turnovers eventually did come. When the Bucs got the lead, and this is another thing that just got me those 2000s vibes, early 2000s, late 90s. You know, it was a dogfight. Bucs couldn't score a lick. When they finally did, and they got ahead, that's when the old Bucs defenses used to really go to work. Because now they had you. Now they knew you were passing. Now they could pin their ears back. Now they could play center field out there in the secondary. And that's what happened. I mean, then the Bucs turned three straight possessions into interceptions. One was returned for a touchdown by Mike Edwards. The other two were by Jamel Dean. And at that point, it's 20-3. And it might as well have been 200-3. So that Bucs and listen, let's be fair, okay? Now, I'm not going to talk about the Saints game a ton since it was a few days ago now. We're looking ahead. But let's be fair. Officiating played a big, big factor in that game. And there were bad calls both ways. But the Bucs benefited more from the calls than the Saints did. And the officiating crew was Sean Hockley, who's the son of Ed Hockley. And Sean Hockley's crew is notorious for being the most flag-happy in the NFL. They love to see themselves on TV. Sean Hockley will go into these long, very wordy explanations, just basically milking it for all it's worth instead of just kind of staying back, calling the game. No, he's going to have more flags. His crew is going to have more flags than any other crew. He's going to sit there and think he's the smartest guy in the room and talk, talk, talk while he's on the microphone. And I can't stand their crew. Their crew's bad for football. Every game they do of ours, and every game they do anywhere, too many flags, too many very, very, very stringent interpretations of things you could probably just let go, and it's just annoying as hell. I don't like people like that in real life. And you know, look, sports are different than real life. Sports are black and white. They have rules. I mean, you're not in real life, I'm a spirit of the law guy, not a letter of the law guy. And I can't stand being around letter of the law people because they're annoying and they're sticks in the mud and they usually stifle fun and spontaneity. But in a sport, you know, you're supposed to enforce the rules. I get it. But they go way out of their way to throw flags that really do not need to be thrown. And so, you know, you saw it, for example, it was 3-3. And even that felt like a relief because it was 3-0 most of the game and the Bucs had finally broke through for a field goal. But then the fourth quarter touchdown drive, okay? It's 3rd and 9, I believe it was. Brady hits Cam Brate for 8 yards. He's just short of the stick. It's about to be 4th and 1. And I was yelling at Brate, get the stick, get the stick! And he couldn't quite get there. There's a flag down. I'm like, huh, weird. And they threw it on the tackle. I'm like, I didn't see anything there. They call a helmet-to-helmet, unnecessary roughness. And on the replay, I mean, again, it helped the Bucs, so I'm not, like, being a homer here. I thought that was a very shaky call. I guess their helmets did make contact with each other, but to me, that's not the same as a helmet-to-helmet hit. And they whistled the Saints for that. So instead of us having a 4th and 1 that we probably go for, and the Bucs haven't exactly had a ton of short yardage success, but still, we don't know. That they could have gone for it and missed it, or maybe they elect to punt. But it would have been 4th and 1. Now it's a 1st down and 15 more from where they were. Huge. Keeps the drive alive. A few plays later, now it's 2nd and 8. We throw an incomplete pass to the other side of the field. Oh, man, now it's 3rd and 8. Hell, this sucks. We're going to be tough to pick this up. Oh, wait, there's a flag. They call defensive holding on Cam Jordan, and they show the replay of this one, and this one was not shaky. This one was out and out. Atrocious. And it's important to say these things because we always bitch about the refs when it goes against us, so you need to give equal time to when it helps you. If I was the Saints, I would and would still be incensed at that call because literally nothing happened. Like, he rushed the passer just like any other down. Like, nothing happened. And these jackass Sean Hockley crew, they find a reason to throw a flat. So now, instead of 3rd and 8, now it's an automatic 1st down again. And then a couple plays later, Brady makes an unreal throw. The touchdown to Perriman, the only offensive touchdown of the day. If you watch the play again, like, Brady drops back. He's got a clean pocket. Great job by the offensive line. Okay? Then he looks for the Perriman route out in the corner of the end zone. Perriman is completely covered, not open at all. So Brady kind of, like, pauses, like, yeah, that's not there. And then you can see the effort in his mind. Like, he pumps, and you can almost see him go, eh, effort. And he just throws it anyway. And again, the coverage is tight. Like the defender was less than a yard from Perriman, but body position, no matter where you are, how close you are to somebody, you can only be on one side of them, right? So if you throw it perfectly to the other side, and that's what Brady did, just throws it perfectly to the back corner of the end zone, even with the great coverage. Like Perriman didn't even do anything. Like the ball like vaporized and then appeared in his arms. It was just unbelievable throw. So you can see Brady, like, really, he did. He went to throw it the first time and said, it's not a good idea. And then said, no, you know what? I'm still going to do it. And then just zoop, and it's there. And it's touchdown Tampa Bay, and it's 10-3. And right then and there, it was only a one-score game, but it felt over, didn't it, because of this defense? It was 10-3, and then Jamel Dean ends up with the pick six. Bucks didn't add an insurance field goal, and it was 20-3. So this, as long as this defense is the way it is, I mean, I ain't going to be mad about it. You're looking at what the usage of Brady is compared to last year. You're looking at the first down pass run ratio and all those things, and it's a lot different. And there's been speculation, oh, Brady's on a pitch count. Oh, no, it's not that. It's because this defense is so good. Oh, well, it's a combination of those things, but also they're down these receivers. Julio Jones and Chris Godwin are out, and their offensive line is dinged up. It might be a combination of all three things. I don't know what the exact reason is. I mean, we have one big reason, I think, regardless of any of the three things I just mentioned, is that we have a new head coach who is not the same as Bruce Arians. Although Bruce Arians was down there, you may have noticed, on Sunday. Some things may have happened involving him, which we'll get to in a second. But I think that's a big reason. I think Todd Bowles is different than Bruce Arians, number one. But number two, yeah, all three things probably are true. You've got what was said. Yes, the offensive line is dinged up. You're playing guys at some really important spots that are not seasoned guys and not guys with a lot of experience or a proven track record. Yeah, Chris Godwin didn't play. You didn't have Julio Jones. And we'll talk about the injury setup here in a minute for Green Bay. So there's that. And then, I mean, the pitch count one seems to me like it'd be the least likely. I mean, Tom Brady is getting older, of course. And yet, like, when he does throw, I mean, I don't think it's like a pitch count thing where, oh, man, we need to lessen the load on Brady. He can throw just fine. And maybe you say, oh, well, the reason he can throw just fine is because they're not using it. I don't know. I don't think it's a pitch count. But, damn, like, it's different. I mean, it is different. Let's look at the numbers. 25 first down plays, okay? They only threw on six of the first. I mean, they're running on first down like crazy. And I'll tell you this right now. You can say what you want about the reasons why. You're not going to have a productive offense doing this. So don't try and say, oh, well, this is what's best. And maybe it's what's best because they think their defense can just carry the day. But if your whole idea is let's score points, let's get yards and score points, running the ball over and over on first down is not how to do that. And the Bucs offense has not performed well for two straight weeks now. When you're 2-0, it's fine. Nobody cares. The defense is doing great. If they lose a game because the offense can't whiz a drop, we're all going to get pissed and come back on here, and all of a sudden all these problems that they still are showing right now that don't seem like problems because they're winning, now all of a sudden there'll be problems. But it won't be all of a sudden because these things have been happening. 25 first down plays. Brady, on those six passes, by the way, you think, oh, well, they need to pass more. Admittedly, they didn't do well on the six passing plays. He was only 3 of 6 for 6 yards on six first down attempts. The other 19 first downs, they ran on all of them. Leonard Fournette actually did better on his first down carries than the rest of his carries. He had 15 first down carries only. He had 56 yards, so just shy of 4 yards a carry on those. And then he averaged closer to, like, I think it was barely 2 yards or a yard and a half on the non-first down carries. So anyway, you slice it, they're getting real used to 2nd and 8, 2nd and 7, 2nd and 9. That's not a recipe for success. It's not. Offensively, it's not. So they're going to have to either do better or their defense is going to have to keep being otherworldly or some combination of those things. But the 75% run rate on first down, it's a little bit maddening. And, you know, the way these, like I said, I've said it several times, including last week, every game is a snowflake or a fingerprint, or like it's got its own character and personality. The way it unfolds is different every time. No two games are alike. So in the course of a game, you know, it's not like you just make a plan and then that's what happens. Sometimes things change. Sometimes you find yourself doing something more than you thought you would or less than you thought you would. They might come out and throw more, a bunch more on first down this week against Green Bay. It'll depend on how the game's going, you know. But they're definitely a different offense, and not for the better than they have been. And of course, you know, without some of the weapons and with some of the injuries, that makes a big difference. So what do we have there? Okay, we know Mike Evans is suspended. And let me talk about that for a second, because Evans is suspended for one game. It happens to be a important one against a division, or not a division, a conference rival. And it's because of the dust-up that happened there in the second half with Marshawn Lattimore, trash-talking Bruce Arians. So here's what happened. You guys all saw it, but like, here's what happened, okay? Play ends. Marshawn Lattimore's walking off. He's talking all kinds of junk to Brady on the way by. Doesn't do anything physical, admittedly, but he's talking all kinds of junk to Brady. So then, that's typical. Nothing, that's probably pretty common on most plays. But you could read the lips on Brady because the camera was like square to him. He's facing Lattimore, but he's also facing the camera from the sideline. And Brady looks at Lattimore and he goes, "F you, bitch." Like, you could see his lips very clearly. And when he said that, Lattimore, who was already talking crap, just walking by, now turns and actually walks toward Brady and continues to talk. Again, doesn't do anything physical. But at that point, that's when, okay, it's one thing to just kind of say stuff to Brady as you're jogging off the field. Now he is addressing Mr. Brady, okay? So Lenny's not going to have that. So Fournette gets up in there with Lattimore, and then Fournette pushes him, okay? Now Lattimore pushes Fournette back. And that's when Mike Evans just completely cleans house. Evans just comes in. It's just like, hey, you know what was so fun about it? I don't like that he's suspended, but how satisfying, because I don't know how many of you like wrestling or at any point maybe in your life liked wrestling. And I've fallen in love with it and out of love with it several times in just basically based on my age and also just how good or bad wrestling has gotten. It fluctuates. But anyway, how satisfying is it when something in real life kind of feels like pro wrestling? Because we know wrestling is what it is, but that's, you know, they're putting on a show and all that stuff. But this was like pro wrestling. Hey, you're talking junk to my guy? Oh, you pushed one of my guys, and that's it. No, we're not going to wait and ask any more questions. Evans just comes in, just like a guy coming out of the locker room, and all of a sudden you hear the music playing, all that, and they run out and just absolutely mows down Lattimore. Now, I've heard different opinions on it this week. Hey, love seeing stand up for his guys, great teammate. That's not going to be forgotten. Those guys have a bond that's close, and it's going to pay off later in the year. Or, hey, dumb decision, got to be smarter than that. Think big picture, can't be without you for one of the bigger games of the season, and now we are. And both things can be true, okay? And looking at his suspension, I mean, you know, and they upheld it. Yeah, I'm recording this on Thursday. They upheld it yesterday. I didn't have any high hopes that on appeal they were going to overturn it. It's pretty cut and dried. We have seen incidents in the past. I know there was one that I retweeted. It's on my Twitter feed if you want to follow me at Bobby Game Day, or just go to my page and look at it. It was AJ Green like body slamming somebody. I forget who it was a few years ago. Like, he wraps him up from behind, just body slams him. And that one was a double ejection thing, just like the Lattimore Evans thing. But there was nothing else after that. No suspensions or anything. So you can always find inconsistent applications of, oh, this guy did something even worse and didn't get suspended, and this guy got suspended for something that was less. You know, there's a million of those examples. I wasn't surprised that he got the one-game suspension. I wasn't surprised that that suspension was upheld. And, it sucks. Yeah, I mean, if you look at the Bucs here, and the injury report's not as bad as originally feared, but it still looks like, obviously, Godwin's not going to play. Julio Jones didn't come. He had a scheduled day off on Wednesday's practice. Then Greg Allman of The Athletic, the Bucs beat writer, reported he didn't see him at Thursday's practice. But they only get to watch the first part, and that's mainly special teams. So it's still possible he went out after that, or maybe he didn't practice. But, you know, he may not play. I mean, I think he'll play, but he may not play. So now you're down those two guys and Mike Evans. That's literally your top three guys. Russell Gage was listed on the injury report, but he's supposed to be fine. You know, it's a big loss. And yet, Brady has done this before with a lesser receiving core than he would have, even if Julio Jones doesn't play on Sunday. So it's not like Brady is totally relying on having a top-notch receiving core, but it doesn't help. So yeah, I mean, from that standpoint, poor decision by Mike Evans. He probably could have gotten away with, here's the thing, these things are very, very subtle, and the line is very fine. If he comes in there and merely pushes Lattimore, but doesn't completely level him to the ground, I bet right there it's not a suspension. Same pretty much idea, making the same point, but he came in hard. He went hard. And that's how you're taught to do it, right? I mean, we don't tell someone, you know, oh, love tap them, you know, put somebody on the ground, right? But this wasn't an actual football play. And if he just comes in there and shoves Lattimore, I'll bet you nothing would have happened. But he elected, and in the moment, I get it. And there was a lot of testosterone flowing. There was a lot of heat of the moment stuff. Bruce Arians is there on the sidelines yelling at Lattimore. Lattimore's yelling at him. Lattimore's yelling at Brady. Fournette and Lattimore are pushing each other. All kinds of stuff's going on. And like I said, it was kind of cathartic watching it in real time, just like it's probably cathartic to do it, and then the real life consequences kick in, and you're like, oh, wait, this sucks. I can't play on Sunday. But seriously, like in real life, like I've never been in a fight in my life, okay? I've had one incident in a flag football game when I was playing intramural flag football at UF, similar to that incident, where the guy threw the ball at one of my teammates after my teammate pulled his flag because he thought he pulled it too hard. And the guy threw the ball, and I did the same thing Mike Evans did. I came in from another part of the field having seen that, and I came in. I didn't put the guy on the ground or anything. I just came in and stood between him and my teammate and started yelling at him. Then everybody reached in to break it up. Then the guy punched me in the jaw, like through like two people that were trying to break us up. He reached over and hit me in the jaw. Not hard or anything. Like it was no big deal. But then he got ejected for that. We kept playing, eventually won the game, and that was it. But it didn't get like physical enough to where like anybody went to the ground or anything like that. That's the closest I've ever been to being in a fight. But I've also had incidents, and here's the thing I did like about it. I've always loved the whole concept of taking up for your guys, right? Like, we all respond to that, don't we? I don't want to say especially guys, because I think women can respond to it too. But the idea of, like, these are my boys. I don't know you. You might be a good guy, but you're on the other side. You got the wrong colors on, and you're doing something to one of my guys, so that ain't going to work. I like that, you know? And I remember times, like, going out with my buddies in our 20s, like we all did. You know, you roll in your crew with however many guys, 3, 4, 5 guys. And I remember a couple times, like, and again, we never had anything, like, actually happen. But I remember some Swingers-type stuff, like the movie Swingers I'm talking, not actual swing, but the movie Swingers where, you know, they run into those guys and one bumps into each other, they start jawing. I remember some things like that happening. It might have even been a guy in my group who's, like, a friend of a friend, and I didn't know him that well, you know? But it didn't matter because he was with my crew. So I might have just met that guy 2 hours ago, and the guy on the other side might be a guy I'd be buddies with if I knew him better. Doesn't matter. That one's on my crew. We're together. You're not messing with him. That ain't going to work. Like, I love seeing that. So I like that, you know, the Bucks are at least tight, if nothing else. But like I said, there's ways to do these things, and it's a very fine line. I just wish Evans had come in and maybe pushed Lattimore. Hard enough to, like, send a message, but not to actually put him on the ground. And that little itty-bitty difference, I'll bet, would have resulted in nothing more than a 15-yard penalty. And even then, maybe an ejection, but probably not even that. But certainly not a suspension. But as it is, here we are. Oh, and the whole Bruce Arians thing, the reason I haven't brought that up yet, you may have heard, like, he was saying, you know, people are like, why is Bruce Arians on the sidelines? I know Florio for Pro Football Talk was like, why is Bruce Arians on the sidelines? He's not even an official coach anymore. And I think the Saints coach said that too. First of all, I don't know if you know or not, but he's still with the team. You don't have to be a coach. There's people on the sidelines all over the damn place. I mean, if he was just completely retired and like a private citizen, then maybe you say, okay, it's weird that he's on the sideline. But he works for the front office now. So he's anybody with the organization would not raise any eyebrows with me whatsoever if they're on the sidelines for a game, okay? This is not just players and coaches and trainers, like they say. You can have people down there, you know, Jason Light always watches the games from the sidelines as the GM. He thinks he gets a better feel for things that way. And I know Arians said, well, they didn't offer us press box seating, so we had to be down there. And they said, no, you had to see it. I could not possibly care less, okay? I hope he's on the sidelines again this weekend. But he was yelling too, and there was a whole thing with that. And it's fine. It's all totally fine. Just have a little bit of discretion if you're Mike Evans. You know, understand that how far you can go without going too far. He went a little bit too far. And so now we are without this, top two for sure receivers with Godwin and Evans, and we'll see about Julio Jones. But as far as the injury report goes, so the Thursday injury report came out, and if you're listening to this on Friday or later, then you've seen the other one, but there were a lot of names on it. Donovan Smith did practice on Thursday. He had a brace on that right elbow that got hyperextended. So if the fact that he's practicing is a really good sign, I doubt he'd be doing that if he wasn't going to play, whether with a brace or not, on Sunday. Greg Allman reports that Chris Godwin or Julio Jones were not seen Thursday, but again, could have been later in the practice. They only see the first little bit. He says other players that were listed on the injury report all seem fine now. That includes Robert Hainsey, who is out there, normal go. Fournette was out there, normal go. Scotty Miller, Russell Gage, Rashad Perriman. I mean, literally all of our receivers practically were listed here. But those three were fine. Zion McCollum, all seem fine, according to Allman. So the main injury focus right now, we know Evans is out. It looks like Donovan Smith is good and these other receivers are good. The main injury focus is Julio Jones. Oh, and even Tom Brady, who's got scheduled days off every Wednesday, even he practiced on Wednesday. So we'll see if Julio Jones can go or not. And other than that, you know, it looks like they're going to have pretty much what they've been having and get Donovan Smith back. So we'll see. Tom Brady versus Aaron Rodgers, 3-1 all time, including 2-0 with the Bucs. Both of those games came in 2020. One was that regular season 38-10 beatdown the Bucs had, which was the first time they kind of served notice in 2020, like, hey, we're pretty good. And that game then went on to the NFC Championship, and the Bucs beat him again. Rodgers and Brady split two games they played against each other when Brady was a Patriot. It's funny, though, Rodgers hasn't had a lot of success against the Bucs. In fact, they're the only team he's below 500 against as a quarterback. He's 3-4, although he does owe his only Super Bowl to the Bucs losing a tiebreaker to the Packers in 2010, thanks to a horrible offensive pass interference call on Kellen Winslow Jr. That's another story for another day. But overall, he's under 500 against the Bucs, and he's got four career games. He's never thrown four interceptions in a game, ever. He's got four games ever in his career where he's had three interceptions, and two of those were here in Tampa. It was in 2008 and 2009. That 2009 game I remember so clearly because that was, one, I believe it was Josh Freeman's first start. Remember Josh Freeman? And two, the 0-7 Bucs for the first time since they had changed their uniforms did the throwback game. So that was the first time that the orange uniforms had appeared at Raymond James Stadium. And I never forget, because I still have my t-shirt, my Bucko Bruce t-shirt that they put on every seat for that game. And the Bucs were 0-7. They were garbage. Freeman started, though. It was a wild game. They won 38-28. Rodgers had three picks. And I remember like seeing the Bucs scoring touchdowns and doing things in those uniforms. The field was painted just like it used to be at Tampa Stadium. And I remember being overcome with emotion. One of the few times I've been that overcome with emotion, and this was for an 0-7 team that would be 1-7 after this win. But, man, it felt so good. And I know those uniforms are coming back next year, but I remember that distinctly. So that game and then the year before, another Bucs win at Raymond James Stadium. Two of the four times in his career he's had three interceptions have been at Raymond James. So pretty wild stuff. We'll see if we can get anywhere close to a repeat on that. Oh, and I didn't mention Cole Beasley yet. We signed Cole Beasley, who had been busy doing his own research and is now a member of the Buccaneers. And so we'll see if he can. I don't know if he'll play. A lot of it may depend. Todd Bowles like didn't sound as enthusiastic as I thought he would. He was like, yeah, you know, this guy was on the street. We were able to sign him. We'll see if we can get him up to speed. But, I mean, even as recently as last season, he was pretty effective. And I think it's, I mean, obviously it says something that no NFL team had signed him. Even though the physical talent is there, I know he had, you know, he's an anti-vaxxer type and missed some games because of COVID and on and on and on. But hey, look, right now, well, you're in battlefield conditions here. We're down a couple guys. I'm not going to judge, all right? He can play. I think he can play still. I think Brady thinks he can play still. And I know everybody says he fits that Wes Welker, Danny Amendola, you know, Julian Edelman role. And I mean, you know, a guy like him. And like Rick Stroud, the Bucs beat writer for the Tampa Bay Times, has been saying, the Bucs aren't buying green bananas this year, he likes to say. They're not thinking about like down the road. They are all out to win the Super Bowl right now because they know it's probably their last shot with Brady. So they don't want to get guys off the street who don't know what they're or haven't done this before, who have potential. They don't care about potential right now. They want to get a guy who they can at least, yeah, he's not going to learn the offense overnight or anything like that, but who can go out there and play the game and knows what he's doing somewhat, and Brady can get him up to speed. So I'm intrigued by the signing, and the Bucs did this with Julio Jones too. It was a great signing. I mean, there's no penalty. Like, why would you not take guys like that who have done it and are still have a chance to be really good? And whether they get injured or not, you don't lose anything. I mean, like Julio Jones, okay, he's got his knee dinged up. He already has proved worth it. He had a good game in the Dallas game. And I think he'll be out there again on Sunday. Cole Beasley, we'll see. I'm not sure if he's playing or not. But looking ahead to that, that's what we've got. 425, Fox. It'll be, white pants and white jerseys. I don't know why they insist on wearing white pants. The pewter pants, they wore them against the Saints. White jerseys, pewter pants. Look gorgeous. Look so good. No reason to go to white pants. Looks like practice uniforms, but whatever. And anyway, that'll be on Sunday afternoon. We will be back next week. Hopefully, we're talking about a 3-0 football team by then. But as of right now, folks, you got to feel pretty good. If you look at this offense, it hasn't performed at the rate we'd hope it would. But to be 2-0 with a defense like this, let me just get a couple more numbers that I was looking at here. The Bucs. Actually, I wanted to mention this earlier on the show. Pass play rate over expectation. So this is basically a stat. They take the situation where you'd be basically based on what the down and distance is, the score of the game, field position, all those factors, and they look at, okay, would a team pass here or not normally? And then they look at, did this team pass here or not normally? So pass rate over expectation. Did they pass more often than a team in these same exact scenarios would, or did they pass less? And the Bucs last season, or actually combined first two seasons of Tom Brady, last season and 2020, the Bucs were 9% over expectation for pass rate based on situation. This year, they're 5% under, which actually isn't as much as I would have thought, to be honest with you. But either way, it's slightly under. So we'll see if that continues. Does it have to do with the injuries? Does it have to do, I mean, all the conditions that existed against the Saints and against Dallas kind of exist now as far as injuries, as far as having, you know, Todd Bowles as the head coach and things like that. But either way, if you look at Green Bay's side, here's one thing. If the Bucs have a weakness on defense, I'm not saying they have a weakness, but I mean, it's one thing where they may be a little susceptible is running backs catching passes. You can get some yards that way on them. They're not giving up anything big, but, you know, the Packers do a good job of that. The Packers have Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon. Combined, those two are averaging 7.1 yards per target this season. As far as air yards, which is how far passes travel in the air, Aaron Rodgers is averaging only 5.3 air yards. That's the second lowest of any quarterback. So they're going to want to hit running back. I mean, that's what they've been doing. And it kind of lines up with one of the ways you have success, if you have any success against the Bucs defense. So it's just something to watch. And, you know, I wouldn't think the Packers would be looking to air it out. The Bucs have contested 25% of passes through the first two games. So that doesn't sound like a lot, but I mean, when they say contested, that means there's been somebody there on the guy on a pass thrown. That is actually leading the NFL, 25% of, you know, thrown passes contested. So again, it seems like all these things line up to the Packers trying to dink and dunk, but this is why adjustments are made and things like that. You know, maybe the Bucs throw a wrinkle at them, or maybe the Packers try and do something, you know, different than we thought they would, whatever it is. But just something to keep an eye on for this game. The Packers certainly looked a lot better against the Bears in their Sunday night game this past weekend than they did in week one against Minnesota. But that, you know, that won the Bucs, okay? So with all that said, folks, it's been fun. And now it's time to start getting ready. It's going to be a big football weekend. Weather should be nice for this weekend. Of course, we're watching that deal out in the Caribbean. But for now, it's about the football. Big slate of college games. Bucs, the number one Fox national game on Sunday afternoon. If you're going to the game, have a great time. If you're not, have some friends over. Get together with people. You know, go out by the pool, whatever it is. It should be a lot of fun. Just make it a reason to get together and spend time with people you enjoy spending time with. Thanks to you guys for listening. Thanks to our good friends at Bill Curry Ford. Check them out, BillCurryFord.com. If you want to look at brand new or pre-owned cars, trucks, vans, whatever it is, and you get the unlimited nationwide lifetime warranty with anything you buy. And thanks to the Joes for giving me this platform. That's the Free Stretch. We're getting ready for week three. I'll talk to you next week, wherever you are. Good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucs. To stay so lonely now.